Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 33 of the Clappercast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Burke.
And we're recording this on the evening of December 16th, 2019. So how about we start off with a big story from earlier today that Taylor Hall finally got traded.
Finally.
So yeah, we've had like what, 2 weeks of very, very constant rumor bombardment of rumors about what he's gonna who he's gonna get traded to, and then the last 2 games he's actually been benched by the Devils. As a precautionary reasons, because they don't want him to get hurt, which is a
Which
very real
is,
possibility with
yeah,
him.
very likely. Yeah, so let's just get
So
right
he
into
finally
it.
got dealt to the Arizona Coyotes with quite the interesting return, I might say.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting trade. I'm interested to see what your take is. We haven't really talked about it too much today.
How about I just run through the novel of the return first?
Sounds good. Yeah.
So what we've got here is Taylor Hall at 50% retained salary, so the Devils are retaining 3 million of his 6, and Blake Spears to the New Jersey Devils for, or to the Arizona Coyotes, pardon me,
Great
for
hockey
Nick
name.
Merkley, Nathan Schnarr, Kevin Ball, a 2020 conditional first round pick, and the condition on that pick is that if the selection is in the top 3, then it's going to be protected and become a 2021 first rounder. As well as a 2021 conditional third round pick, where the conditions on that are that if the Coyotes win a playoff round or re-sign or Taylor Hall re-signs in Arizona, the pick becomes a second. If both of those conditions are met, then the pick becomes a first.
It's a smart condition, I
So
think.
that's quite the story for that that pick there.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about this? How do you feel about it?
I'm thinking that it's a great collection of hockey names.
Yes.
Right off the bat, Merkley, Schnarr, Ball, Spears, and Hall. Like
Yeah.
it's just
That's
a
just a
trade
good
that happened in
name.
the 1980s. That's what it
I
sounds like.
want the ball. I really wanted to see the ball and Hall line, but I guess we're not going to get that now.
I don't really know anything about any of these guys. I tried to look them up really quickly, and it looks like the only one with still a little bit of an upside is Kevin Ball. But other than that, I looked at like Nate Schnarr, and he got like 102 points in the OHL last year. So I mean,
That's pretty good.
that's pretty good.
Depends,
102 points
depending, he
in
might be getting into
65
the
games.
overage point here, but that's still a good season.
Yeah. I think he might have been overage because he was drafted in 2017 in round
Yeah, so
three by the
draft plus
Devils,
two.
so he's probably
Oh, he
overage. But
played. Oh, he's in the AHL right now. So yeah, he was overage last year.
still, I mean, that's all right.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, who are all these guys really?
Yeah, I mean Nick Merkley, I've heard his name over the past few years. He seems to have kind of topped out as a mid-ish line forward in the AHL. He's kind of looking like a 40, 50, 60 point guy in the AHL. So he could probably become a useful NHLer, especially get a shot on New Jersey right now with their amazing forward depth.
That's very true.
Yeah, Nate Schnarr, I mean it's his rookie pro year. So he kind of had a massive jump between 17-18 and 18-19 in the OHL. So this is a, you know, it's rookie his rookie pro year. He could be on a decent development curve. They're really stocking up on, yeah, because Merkley and Schnarr are both centers. So their jersey's really trying to stock up down the middle there with Hughes and Hischier already on the NHL roster.
Yeah, it looks like they're just getting a lot of warm bodies.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of, I'd say at most probably, third line guys, but
Yeah.
I don't know enough about them
And
to know.
yeah, Kevin Ball too. For a left defenseman, he's putting up about half a point per game, at least in the OHL. He's actually started with 20 points in 28 games this year, which is good. And he's also got quite a bit of an international resume. So there's a tension around him too.
Okay.
So he could be a decent prospect for them.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of what they need. I think Kevin Ball was yeah, he was invited to Team Canada's junior tryouts.
Yeah, that was
Yeah.
on his resume so far. Cat friendly page.
I don't know if they've announced the final cuts yet, but I'm not sure if he would be on the team or not. But that'd be interesting to see if he was on the team.
Yeah.
Be
That's
exciting for New Jersey fans.
I think so, yeah, 'cause it's kind of that weight off the shoulders that they
Yeah.
finally like that story's done. And I mean, as much as it sucks to lose like former MVP, best player for how many years there. And to be completely honest, the first comment I had to you is that this trade basically resembles that thing you do in NHL video games where you just stack a whole bunch of random crap and see what you can get for it. So that's just like a lot of assets involved in the one side.
The value has gone down a lot because it's known Hall wants out, and they're just getting something for him at this point.
Basically. And this the thing, too, is that he is a rental, so he's not going to get as much to begin with. And there's no guarantee on him re-signing because he doesn't want to talk during the season.
And
For
he's
the
a very
most part, he hasn't. Yeah, injury prone. He's kind of had a rough year or two here with that. So that's probably about as good as they're going to get, really. And
yeah.
To be honest, a couple of draft picks and a couple of decent prospects that are going to get a shot on their roster. Nothing wrong with that for New Jersey.
Better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick, hey?
Exactly.
And all that being said, so how do you like this trade for Arizona?
So I see it as another really smart move by Chayka. And I think he's kind of clued in that this is actually a very real shot for Arizona to go on a run this season with how they've kind of taken the division over a little bit with the slowish starts by San Jose, Calgary, and Vegas. Edmonton's kind of falling down a little bit in the slump. And Chayka's being able to identify that the Pacific Division is a high-powered offensive division, and they don't really have the roster players to compete with that. So we saw over the offseason they grabbed Kessel, and now they're trying to get a little bit more, and they get Taylor Hall, who can way more match up against the top lines in terms of offense of, say, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Vegas. And it just kind of gives them a little bit more, a different way to win a game rather than trying to win 2-1 every single game.
Yeah, it brings them another scoring talent. I mean, they tried to bring Phil Kessel in. He hasn't really been doing that well. He hasn't been scoring very much. So bringing Hall in, you know, kind of gives them another guy to look to shoot the puck.
Definitely.
Which is cool. I mean,
now the Kessel's tricky part with them is going to be whether or not, like, you know, whatever line Hall and Kessel are probably going to play together, whatever line they're on, if they're going to have a little bit more leniency on the defensive side to let their offensive talent shine a little bit more.
Yeah,
we know Kessel
a
is a pretty
team.
Good playmaker and can feed Hall, who is a very fast skater. So they kind of are a little bit different than the rest of the Coyotes roster that kind of sits back a little bit more. They're going to capitalize on other mistakes and kind of counterattack on the defensive side more so than create the offense.
Yeah.
But if they don't have the leniency to do that, then both of them are still going to struggle.
Yeah. Kessel's only got 19 points in 35 games so far this season. What's Hall at right now?
I believe he had 20-ish.
Yeah, he's at 25 in 30 games played.
Yeah, so that's not a bad season for him, really. It's right on track for his norm.
So I think he'll be better. He doesn't have to be like the one skilled player on the team like he was in New Jersey's first year there.
Well, he's also going to have a little bit more of a system to counter him because he isn't the most defensive player in the world.
Yeah, he's got better
so,
defense for sure, better goaltending.
He's probably going to end up with a guy like
coaching.
Ekman Larson on his back end.
Yeah. Ekman Larson, Chychrun, Goligoski, Demers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good defensemen in Arizona. So I think it's a smart move. And then, you know, getting the 50% retained allows them to fit him in. They probably got a little bit of room still, actually. And, you know, it is a rental, but they didn't really give up too much. They gave up a first. It's going to be a late rounder anyway.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I think it's a good trade. I'm excited to see Hall in a Kachina jersey. It's going to look cool.
That's going to be
I'm
nice
excited.
Flying down the ice.
I've always had a soft spot for Arizona. I don't know why. I just like them, and to see
they're just kind of one of those
so
teams
well.
That's never done anything to anybody, and
yeah,
they're just
that's
there.
True. Yeah, they're doing really well this season, and it's exciting. It's always cool to see new teams at the top of the standings. So I think it's a good trade.
Overall, yeah, I think both teams' needs are met fairly well. I still can't get over just the weird combination of stuff for New Jersey. That's where I'm hung up on. But yeah, you're right. It is a fair trade for both sides. They kind of get exactly what they needed out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with these prospect ones, you can't really evaluate it right now anyways.
Yeah, it's always tough to see who got the better end of the trade initially, like right off the bat when there's younger players and picks involved, because you have no idea what that pick can turn into. It's kind of like the whole Brady Tkachuk thing in Ottawa Like, is he worth it over the other
For
pick?
sure. So I'm just checking out the other piece Arizona got, that Blake Spears. Back in his bantam, one of his bantam seasons, he had, or it's recorded here, he had 288 points in 97 games. It's wild how that happens.
Insane how much players dominate in minor hockey. You look at like all sorts of pro numbers and they just go on fire in minor hockey, and you just know that they were destined for the show. Maybe let's move on to the suspension of Joel Farabee of the Philadelphia Flyers. So he was suspended 3 games for hitting Matthew Perreault on the Winnipeg Jets. And I saw that hit like real time, and I was surprised that he got a game misconduct for it. I thought it was like a late hit. It was really late, but he wasn't targeting the head or anything. It wasn't too violent. So 3 games seems a bit high for me, but what do you think?
I'm surprised it went to three, like right off the bat for a guy with no record or like history of being dirty. I'm okay with the suspension. Like, it was super late. Like, I'm pretty sure Farabee didn't even start moving after Perreault until the puck was pretty much gone. I'm trying to look at that right now, actually.
Yeah, it was definitely a
Yeah,
late hit.
so Farabee basically started going after Perreault as Perreault was getting rid of the puck. There's a solid half a second to a second gap between that. Completely unnecessary. You're right. There wasn't a whole lot of high contact, but it was kind of a blind side because Perreault wasn't looking or expecting that.
Yeah, I mean that's the one aspect to me. Like he's kind of watching his pass a bit. I know it's late and you're not really expecting anything, but like if Farabee was closer, he still would have blindsided him because he wasn't ready for contact, right? I don't know. That's just kind of the old school. I grew up watching Rock'em Sock'em Hockey, Don Cherry, you know, the big hit. It's I like the interference call and I like a suspension, but it just seems a bit heavy-handed. But I know Perreault was hurt on the play, and it's just a vulnerable
He's now
player.
out with a concussion, actually.
And I think, let me just, I'm watching it right now. I think it's probably because of how his head hits the ice, but
Either that or it's just a whiplash.
the whiplash could be it.
Because like his hit, like he gets hit right in like right square in the chest, so his head kind of flies forward, and then the impact when he lands, sending it back, would definitely be enough. I mean, I typically end up over suspending or over punishing on that type of stuff, so three is kind of like fine for me, for a nice precedent or just actually showing like that was a dangerous play, that was completely unnecessary, that wasn't even like. There's no need to go and do that. So that's where I kind of say like, yeah, it's okay to go for higher suspension on that because it wasn't even part of the play. He just went and did that off on his own.
I just don't really like the injury factoring into this suspension here. Suspension, Jesus. It's just kind of a weird thing for me. I just don't think it should factor into the call. I know there's some people who think like you should suspend someone for as long as a player is out. I don't agree with that because,
Injuries are
you know,
really,
people are
you can like completely
different.
level a guy and he can get right up and play again, and then you have some weird stumble or something that'll cause like a 4 month injury.
Yeah, I mean, that's like Brent Sopel got hurt picking up a cracker off the floor. He like pulled his back. So I don't think the injury should factor into it. I think the intent should be what you penalize and suspend on, and I think it was like a bonehead play. It's definitely a penalty, but I don't think he was trying to hurt him. It was just like a late hit. So
Yeah,
it is what it
that's fair.
is. I'm okay with the suspension. It's not like egregious to me, and it's, you know, lesson learned. Don't do that.
Don't be an idiot.
You know, what is he? He's probably got like under what, like 15 games in the NHL, Farabee. So
Easily.
yeah. Just wake up. Can't do that.
Yep,
That's a
Q
no-no.
Wes McCauley. We need him to come in here with that.
You can't do that. That should be the NHL suspension videos now. Just, you can't do that. Okay. Can't argue with that.
Yep. Yeah, it's a very definitive statement. There's no arguing that you can't do that.
It's in the rule book. You can't do
Yep. Let's just replace the NHL rulebook, get rid of the whole thing, and just leave it a picture of Wes McCauley saying you can't do that.
I'd
And
be
then when
okay
you
with
throw
it.
the rulebook at them, it's very, very straightforward what's been happening.
Let's change gears here. So we've had multiple coach firings since our last
Yeah.
episode,
Even more
and
coaching news.
one of them we expected, sorta. And one of
Yeah,
them
this,
was
yeah.
completely out of nowhere.
Exactly. So let's go with the one we expected first.
Yeah, so that's San Jose fired the struggling Pete DeBeer or DeBoer. I don't know how to say that, but
He's probably drinking more beer now.
yeah. So he got fired after the team lost what, like five in a row?
Something like that. They went on another really bad losing streak right after they got back into a playoff spot. They lost a whole bunch in a row, and then that was it.
Yeah, I feel like they should have fired him earlier.
Probably after
Just,
the first losing skid, to be honest.
yeah, he was on thin ice after just not getting it done every year, and with the team that they had on paper, they should not have had that bad of a start. I think that they
And
could have spared themselves a lot of heartache down the road by just getting it over
yeah.
with.
And like very similar to Toronto, like San Jose's cup window is so small that they can't afford to have these losing streaks. Like they need to kick it into gear now that like they could be done within the next 2 years. But
Yeah, very
once
true.
Carlson and Burns start going down, once Thornton's gone, once Marlowe's gone, we saw how we see how their team is now and how iffy they can look with those guys just aging at this point. And I don't think they have the greatest prospect pool coming up to replace guys like that.
No.
And let's be honest, you're not going to replace the leadership of Thornton and Marlowe.
And Pavelski's gone already, so that hurts.
Exactly.
Yeah,
So they've brought
it's kind of
in
rough.
Bob Bubner to replace him.
Yep.
He got his first win last night, a couple nights ago. So that was also coinciding with Mark Edward Vlasic's 1,000th game, and he had a pretty good quote about that. I'm not sure if you saw it or not.
Did not.
They were kind of asking Vlasic about who was going to get the puck for the game, if it was going to be Bubner for his first win or Vlasic for his 100th or 1,000th game. And Vlasic said, "I'll just go grab a random one. No one will know the difference anyways,"
Yeah, very
which
true.
is very true.
But the sentimental value.
Yeah. So I guess we can infer from that Bubner got the
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing about they also brought in Mike Ricci and Yevgeny Nabokov as
Ooh,
their new
that's pretty
goaltending
cool.
coach. So they're going a lot for the historical player value there for the team. I
Yeah,
know Nabokov
definitely.
had been the goalie coach for their AHL team for a bit. So he's already got some experience in the organization. I'm not sure where Ricci was, if he got
Barracuda.
promoted from the AHL as well, but got to watch for an old boys club starting down in San Jose.
Yeah, does he still have the hair?
Yes.
Does he have teeth
Yeah,
now?
I saw him walk down the bench, and yeah, he's still got the
I hope he's got the no teeth too.
hair. I only saw the back of his head, but I could tell it was him with
That
the
guy's an
hair.
all-timer. He's so
Yeah.
great. Yeah, it's I like we said, we kind of expected this one. I think we predicted it. I think he was in your write-up for coaches on the hot seat, right?
Yes, I believe I threw him in there in the end of it.
Yeah. So we'll see how Bugner does. He's definitely had some success in the Ontario Hockey League. I think he's won a couple Memorial Cups.
Yep.
He has been with the San Jose Sharks organization before this season. He was an assistant there before, and then he served as the Florida Panthers head coach before he was fired there after not making the playoffs for a couple seasons in a row. And then that was when Gallant took over, I believe. So we'll see what he does. He's kind of been out of the game as a head coach for a little while, and he's got a pretty good team in front of him. I wonder if he's going to be able to turn it around and get the streakiness out of them. They're
Yeah, from the
living up
sounds
to
of it
their
after.
San Jose Sharks name that was on that broadcast. So
Yeah, they
they
won't be
gotta
the
get that
Sharks
out of
anymore.
them. They gotta shard it out and just go one way or the other.
Going to a little bit of their play under Bugner so far, kind of it sounds like he's giving them a little bit more of a suitable structure and suitable system for them, from the sounds of what the players have said. So he may have kind of been able to identify a bit of a change to the play style of the team that's going to help them turn around a little bit and get them back into the playoff race.
Yeah, I'd like to see them do well because, like you said, their window's closing and they don't have very much time. And I still want Jumbo to win a cup. I would be okay with it. So,
Only if he scores 4 goals in the cup winning game.
in the final, yeah, that
Yeah,
would be
just imagine
great.
that cup, Selly.
That retirement party, that would
HR will
be
not be called on that one.
no. You just let him do his thing. Yeah, and then the other coach that got fired. Whew, we still don't know the whole story here,
No.
but
Respectfully so. We're not expecting to for a bit here.
yeah, so Jim Montgomery got fired in Dallas for unprofessional conduct and just kind of came out of nowhere. This was
Yeah.
the day after Bettman had the press conference on the diversity initiatives that the league is going to be taking. And
Yep, and
it was stressed that this was unrelated to that, and then it was known beforehand, and they wanted to act fast on it, and they fired him. Just like that.
Yeah, and I mean, we're talking like nobody knew about this. Like the players didn't even know. They had no hint of this ahead of time. Like, was it Klingberg or Heiskanen they talked to, or and Sagan both gave an interview earlier that day, and they were kind of completely shocked that they had no idea what was happening, that this was going to be a thing. Sagan said, like, you have to respect the decision that was made, that it was made for a good reason. But like I said, they were completely shocked. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah, maybe he called someone's performance horseshit and just
Ooh.
got fired.
Yeah, he's not high enough on the corporate hierarchy to do that yet.
No. Yeah, so this is a big shock. The Stars were definitely turning it around and doing really well. So definitely came out of nowhere. And
Which, yeah,
who's
and I mean, to the team's credit, they seem to have handled this transition fairly well. They're not sucking too bad right now. They had Rick Bowness come in as their new head coach in the meantime. So he's a very, very experienced coach. He's kind of one of those old school guys who doesn't use the old school tactics. He seems to be a more new school adapted person who kind of recognizes the change in people and coaching different generations of players. They're talking. We're watch. I'm watching the Oilers Stars game right now, and the Oilers broadcast was talking about Bowness and trying to get players to listen and figuring out how to get through to them. And he's talking about you have to adapt your style to the players. You don't expect them to adapt to you, which kind of goes a long way to actually making a system that is effective for the team you're coaching.
I don't watch Dallas enough to know if they're changing their systems or they're just going to play the same way under a new coach. I don't really know. But I'd like to see them do well because they're my pick for the cup. So
Yep.
this has kind of thrown a wrench into it, which goes to show that you can never really know what's going to happen in the NHL season. It's just always surprising no matter what. You can never
Yeah,
know for
that's what keeps it
sure.
interesting.
I did want to touch on another coach, not a head coach, but one that has been discussed a bit about these allegations and unprofessional conduct and all that, Mark Crawford. So the Blackhawks announced today that they were going to extend his leave until January 2nd, 2020. This is the over the allegations of abuse from Sean Avery, I think.
Yes,
So
and Patrick O'Sullivan.
okay. So yeah, they've put a date on when his leave will be up, and they've had a comment here. Here's their statement. Through our review, we confirmed that Mark proactively sought professional counseling to work to improve and become a better communicator, person, and coach. We learned that Mark began counseling in 2010, and he has continued therapy on a regular basis since. We believe that Mark has learned from his past actions and is committed to striving to reform himself and evolve personally and professionally over the last decade. And they have also found that there's been no such incidents that have occurred since he's been with the team. So, just like you said,
and
that's kind of the way it's going now, is that these old school coaches have to reform and become more modern coaches. And if this is a true statement, it seems like Mark Crawford has done that. I don't know if we can take
and more credit to him. I mean,
at face value, but it's good to hear, and hopefully it is the truth.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, and after January 2nd, he will resume his normal coaching duties back to where he was before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he'll probably be on some sort of like close watch or probationary type thing for the near future, just to, you know, keep an eye on what's actually happening, a bit of a closer eye, especially with the league wanting to crack down on things.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if he's being proactively trying to change his behavior, acknowledging the mistakes of his past and not making them as he continues to learn and grow, then that's totally fine. More power to him. Like, that's great if someone can acknowledge their wrongdoings in the past and, you know, grow as a person. That's the same type of thing we're seeing with Dan Carcillo,
mm-hmm.
that he still rubs some people the wrong way because of his past actions, but he seems to be doing quite a bit on his own to make up for it and to change. So
admirable.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you can never excuse what's been done in the past, but if you can kind of acknowledge it, you know, apologize appropriately, not like Bill Peters did, and, you know, not make the same mistakes again and again once you've started to grow and acknowledge that it was wrong in the past, then you should be fine to keep going in the future.
Yeah, and with Crawford, it's I don't know when those alleged transgressions took place, but there hasn't been anything that's come out since then, which is good. You know, it's just, and it's like, it, not that it makes a real difference, but it's like something physical. So it's not like constant emotional bullying or anything like that. It's just like there was like a rough play and he kicked Carcillo or whoever. I could see him just getting upset and doing that, and like the spur of the moment, or it's not like, you know, like the stuff that Peters had done or anything else like that. It's like ongoing, racially motivated things.
Fair.
Excusing his behavior, but it's good to see that there hasn't been anything since that happened.
And the fact that he's kind of taken the step to, you know, get to the source of why it happened in the first place. That's kind of what the counseling and therapy is for.
Yeah, it's good.
So that's kind of that's like a more than just an apology, like, oops, yeah, I won't do it again.
Yeah,
it's like, yep, shouldn't have done that. What I'm doing to not do it again. So that's the important part on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to remember that just like players, coaches are under a lot of stress. So it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of them had like substance abuse issues or, you know, problems with their personal
anger management and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, basically the team doesn't do well, they're the first guy out the door.
Exactly.
So
the coach is always the first to take the brunt of the failures or whatever happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of, you know, this sort of area, I did want to mention the Tim Thomas thing quickly. Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah, I read a little bit about it.
Yeah, so he is most known for that 2011 Cup run with Boston, where he was outstanding and won the Stanley Cup. But after that, I don't know if he was traded or he signed with Florida, but he basically had to take like a whole year off from a concussion that he suffered.
Yeah, and this is the first we had heard about it.
And then he tried to come back and just was obvious that he wasn't able to perform at the same level, and he retired and he just kind of disappeared. And he came out recently, like completely out of the blue, and spoke about his time dealing with concussion, post-concussion symptoms, and how hard it was for him. You know, he said he considered suicide and that he wasn't talking to his family and he kind of withdrew. And
yeah.
I think that it's great that players are coming out about that sort of stuff. So to encourage
sure.
more people
it's
to talk about it and to let people know how big of a deal it is and how difficult it is to understand brain injuries. And
and you know, we want to hit a point where the NHL is able to crack down, or I mean, they can't acknowledge it yet because there's still like ongoing legal stuff, so they can't exactly like refute their position publicly.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of have to oppose it, but once the league gets to a point where they actually are able to take it seriously and they actually do that, and it helps to, you know, like we were just talking about the Farabee hit earlier, that Perreault is now out with a concussion or he's in the concussion protocol stuff. And we see how I just think that hit was completely unnecessary and now Perreault's got a concussion. I mean, it only takes one, and then we see what happens with Tim Thomas, where he talks about his struggles afterwards. And we kind of get to see like that link in effect that, yeah, you can still be physical, sure, but you got to be careful, and you can't, like, you can get a concussion on any physical play. It's possible whenever, so you're not going to eliminate hitting, but doing it safely, doing it when necessary, and cutting out the pointless stuff, like, that's going to be huge to reducing the amount of risk to the players.
Yeah, and some people would argue that fighting is, it falls in line there, right?
Yes.
And
but,
I think it's going to take a lot of research to understand all the brain injuries more.
Yeah, for sure. Like, this is all a new thing too, really. It's only kind of been a, like the CTE, the concussion research, it's kind of only really gained any prominence within the last decade.
Yeah, it's huge with the NFL, and I think the NHL is going to have to follow suit.
For sure.
The NFL kind of saw the most press. They denied the link between the game and brain injuries, and then they were forced to reconcile that. But I think it's going to become only a larger issue as we gain further understanding of the brain and how it works with injuries, because you know, you have players like Crosby or Kyle Opozo who have had, you know, a bunch of diagnosed concussions and who knows how many undiagnosed. You know, TJ Oshie is a guy on my favorite team who I worry about just his personal life because his dad deals with early onset Alzheimer's, and Oshie has had a lot of concussions. And I think there's something crazy, like the link between brain injuries and brain disease is like, once you've had three concussions or something, the chance of getting brain disease is like increased by a factor of 80%, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point do you just retire, right?
Yeah.
Because you're,
yeah, that, I
your
guess,
life is at
rough.
Stake. And, it's
and
just
yeah,
not
I mean,
the
that's
mentality.
That's like a good statement, really, like that kind of puts it all together. Like, your life is at stake, so you got to take these things seriously when they happen. It's like, there's a reason why the game can't be as physical in the same way as it was 15, 20 years ago. And it's because the players' lives are at stake, ultimately.
I think we're going to look back and see a lot of this as failures and as reckless. You know, we've had Brad Marchand criticize the concussion spotters this season, and you know, it's easy to criticize them about, you know, it's so obvious that he had a concussion, but is it really? Like, it's just such a hard thing to do, and you know, the players aren't going to want to be removed from a game when they want to get out there and play. But then you have
the same thing happened to Connor McDavid a couple years back, that he got flagged by the spotters in a crucial moment late in the game, so he had to go sit off for a bit, and he was fuming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's a really hard thing to watch, where you're stuck in the middle, like, yeah, you don't want him to be hurt, and then you also don't want your best player to be taken off the ice in the last 5 minutes of a game that you're down a goal.
You don't want the Paul Kariya situation to happen.
Yeah, where you come back and kind of score one of those ghost goals that you don't even remember happened.
Yeah, he doesn't remember anything. That's scary.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a great moment. It's a great all-time call by Gary Thorne, you know, off the floor, on the board. But Kariya does not remember that. Like,
Yeah.
how ridiculous is that? It's so scary. Like, it's one of like the biggest moments of his career,
And he has no
he had a
recollection.
brain injury, so he doesn't remember it. Like, that's not okay. That we should not
No.
be letting that happen anymore. Like, what, 20 years later, whatever. It's
And I don't know. Like, ultimately, I think we have seen some pretty good steps. You know, like, fighting ultimately isn't, I don't think fighting is one of the, like, big causes of it.
Oh.
But it's just, it's obviously a targeted one because you end up, you know, with direct head contact a lot. But, you know, there's a lot of, like, the chicken wing elbows that used to get thrown and the headshots and shoulders to the head and stuff. They still happen, but it seems to be at a lot lower frequency than it was before.
Yeah, I
Like, we
did a
don't see any of those
project.
massive elbows anymore, like Romy on Savard,
Yeah.
or in Hort or Horton was that? I can't remember.
I did a project in university, and it was on the NFL's court case dealing with CTE, and I did, looked into some of the research about it, and they found that it was very common in like offensive linemen and linebackers because it's the repeated smaller hits to the brain. It's not always like one big hit causing a concussion. It's all
Okay,
those
okay.
small, smaller hits to the head.
So
Those
the
add
okay, I
up
see
over
where
time.
fighting would come in then, that if you're taking the repeated smaller blows for the fist.
Yeah, so take a guy like
Okay.
Tom Wilson who fights probably like every fourth or fifth game. Like he fought tonight. He fights a lot. It's not the same fighting as there was in like the 90s and you know and earlier, but it's still, you know, you're getting punched in the head repeatedly, like
Yeah.
basically every week. Like
Right.
there's
So,
gonna
okay. So I
be
see how
some
that would still
sort
be a
of
major issue
long
then.
lasting damage. Now
Yep.
I don't know myself where I really stand on the fighting issue. Like I still find some excitement in it, but ultimately I feel like it's kind of being phased out and I'm sort of okay with it. I feel like
I don't
there'll
miss it.
always be a place in the game for it at
I
times,
agree.
but I feel like I'm kind of figuring it out as I speak here, so bear with me. But the sort of like prearranged show fights, I don't like those. But when it's like the heat of the moment, like kind of fight where like the player does something dirty and someone stands up to him, that I don't mind that. But the stuff where it's like, you know, they line up at a draw and then like the Ryan Reeves fight this earlier this year when he fought Kyle Lowry, was it? You
I
know, when they
believe so.
lined
I
up
think
at
that
the
was one of the dirty
face-off
bits.
dot, like they send Reeves out and it's just like
You just kind of roll your eyes at it, to be honest. That's
that's
all
the
I end up
sort of
doing with
stuff
those.
that's like regular season, like it's just like
Yeah.
meaningless game. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
It's
I'm kind of there with you. I don't exactly miss the fights because I'm actually like I typically watch hockey more for the hockey than the fighting.
oh
But
yeah.
and
For
I
sure.
totally don't miss, and I don't mind that it's kind of phasing out. But I also think that there is a place in a game for it as like a game management tool. That's, you know, teams will use it for momentum. They'll use it to get the guys back in the game. They'll use it to, like you say, stick up for one of the teammates after a dirty play, like that type of thing. So like that doesn't bother me as much, and I don't mind if it stays in for those purposes, and I don't think it'll ever leave for those purposes or for those reasons. But yeah, I'm kind of I don't actually miss it a whole lot.
Yeah, there's definitely time and a place for it. Like you said, the game management where the players take it into their own hands to kind of police the game. Sure, yeah, absolutely. But the, you know, let's fight because we're fighters. That's
The
definitely
stuff
not as
you
into the
hear like
game as much.
the enforcers talk about this, and like kind of some of the stories about them where it's like they go out there with the expectation that they have to fight every game.
Yeah.
And you kind of hear them talk about like the toll it has on their on them mentally. And this is going to go right against what I just said, where I don't think fighting is one of the major sources of it, but they talk about the repeated, like they talk themselves about the repeated blows to the head from the punching and
Yeah.
kind of the damage it does to them physically and mentally. So
Yeah, and then there's also like the stuff with like Rick Rippon and Derek Boogaard where they start taking like painkillers because they're in pain all the time and they get
yeah.
addicted and then that's their own problem. So it's yeah, it's definitely one of those touchy subjects in the NHL, but ultimately I think, yeah, there's you get punched in the head a bunch of times, there's going to be some sort of long lasting damage.
Yeah, I think that's more accurate than what I said.
You don't want to sugarcoat it and downplay it and say that there isn't, because that's untruthful. You have to be honest with what the game is. And just like football, the repeated, you know, smashing into each other, there's a reason that running backs and linebackers have about a 5-year career. That's all you can take before you're just ruined as a human. Like, you cannot take it anymore. It's just brutal. So I don't think hockey's quite at that level, but if you're fighting every game, it probably would be.
Yeah, for sure.
And look at like someone like Sven Berchi. You know, that guy's seeing his career kind of dwindle down here because he's had a lot of concussions and tried to come back, and he gets another one, and it's easier to get one after you've had one. I was talking to someone the other day, and they used to play in the, the NLL, the lacrosse league.
Yes.
And they had a number of concussions that were diagnosed, and he said he was reffing a hockey game. He had to retire from lacrosse because of the number of concussions that he had. He said he was reffing a hockey game after that, and he just like slipped a little bit, and he didn't fall, but he just slipped, and he got a concussion because his brain hit his skull just from like slipping a little bit and like,
you know, insane.
That whiplash. And he said, I have to stop doing everything that I love because I've had too many hits to the head.
Yeah.
Like, that's how bad it can be. And you don't realize that how scary that is, right?
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, you think brain injury, you think you got to hit in the head for that, but no, you don't. It's just the motion. It's the force and the energy that goes through.
Yeah, and that sort of stuff can completely change your personality too.
Mm-hmm.
Change your emotions, Oh, Sagan just scored. Nice. but yeah, it's scary. Definitely scary. And I guess to wrap it all up, it's good that Tim Thomas came out because, you know, like I said, he was most known for that Stanley Cup win, but also he was also known for being like really weird guy. People would make fun of his beliefs and how he disappeared, but it sounded like he was really struggling.
Big time. And yeah, it's kind of a story, like another story. We kind of just did a bit of a jaw drop, like, wait, really? Because we didn't exactly know where he went, because he just kind of fell off the face of the earth, went completely private, and seemed to just distance himself right out of hockey until very recently. So huge props to him for being able to come out and talk publicly about all of that.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's an important story to tell.
Yeah.
An important story to add to the collection of stories and anecdotes about some of the retired and current and former hockey players who have dealt with issues in that realm.
Absolutely. Well, that's everything that I kind of had. Is there anything else that you wanted to go over?
I think that about wraps it up for this week. So once again, thank you all for listening. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you share it on social media. And if you want to keep up to date with our latest content and any random stuff that we pop up through the week, you can follow us on Instagram at ClapperCast Media or on Twitter at ClapperCast. So thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.